This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Frances McDormand, is the star of the new film Fargo, an offbeat crime drama laced with black humor. When the movie opens, a car salesman who's deep in debt cooks up a money-making scam. He's going to hire people to kidnap his wife, collect the ransom money from her wealthy father, then split the ransom with the kidnappers. But of course, the plan blows up in his face, starting with a triple homicide. Frances McDormand plays Marge Gunderson, the very pregnant chief of police in the rural Minnesota town of Brainerd. She never leaves her house without a full breakfast prepared by her husband, Norm. This is her first homicide investigation. Here she is with her deputy at the crime scene examining the victims.
Here's the second one. It's in the head and the hand there. I guess that's a defensive wound.
Oh, yeah?
Where's the state trooper?
Back there, good piece, in the ditch next to his prowler.
Okay. So we got a trooper pull someone over. We got a shooting. These folks drive by. There's a high-speed pursuit. Ends here, and then this execution-type deal.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if our suspect was from Brainerd.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, from his footprint, he looks like a big fella.
You see something down there, Chief?
No, I just think I'm gonna barf.
Jeez. You okay, Margie?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's just morning sickness. Well, that passed.
Yeah?
Yeah, now I'm hungry again.
Fargo was co-written and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen, who gave McDormand her first film role in their first film, Blood Simple. She was also in their film, Raising Arizona. McDormand and Joel Coen are now married. McDormand's other movies include Mississippi Burning, Dark Man, and Shortcuts. She's currently featured in Primal Fear. I asked her about her first impressions of the character she plays in Fargo.
I've known Joel and Ethan for 13 years. I met them 13 years ago doing Blood Simple, and have known them since then, and in fact have known Joel intimately since then as my husband. So when I first read the script, it was a long pause, and why me? Why am I Marge? I wasn't exactly sure. But when we started working on it, the crew was so enamored of Carl and Grimsrud, you know, the two bad guys, that I started thinking maybe Marge is the bad guy and they're the good guys. I wasn't really sure. But I think what's really great, what I always loved about Marge, is that she does lead a really simple life and has a very cozy domestic situation and, you know, a good job in a small town police department. But what's really great about her is that she is so competent in her job.
Yeah.
And the minute she gets to the crime scene, it becomes evident that she's not everything she appears to be. She's a lot more.
She's a lot more interesting than you think she's going to be.
Yeah. I, in fact, find just that whole opening where she's in bed with Norm and then they have breakfast. There's something really fascinating about their relationship, even though on the surface it seems so kind of mundane and banal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there and has been for years.
Now, I read that you have a sister who's a chaplain at a women's maximum security prison.
Actually, a men's maximum security prison.
Wow.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking about Dorothy when I was, you know, working on Marge. It was after the movie was done and I saw it and I turned to Joel and said, ooh, there's a little bit of Dorothy in Marge, isn't there? And he said, yeah, I hadn't thought about it either, but there is. And it's something about her approach to, my sister's very old-fashioned in a way, in her perspective on the world. It's, you know, obviously in her job, working at a maximum security prison, she can't be naive and she can't be innocent to what's going on around her. But she has a lot of faith in human goodness. And I think that that's part of Marge.
The character that you play, Marge Gunderson, the chief of police, is hardly a It's hardly a glamour role. She's pregnant, very pregnant, throughout the film, and wearing a big parka most of the time. Was that ever an issue for you that, I mean, not only wasn't this a glamour role, but it was a role where you were going to be real padded?
No. Well, I've never really played a glamour role. I mean, the only attempt I've ever made, I don't think I was very successful at, did a movie called Dark Man where I played, you know, the girl, the girlfriend. And that was the only time I ever really got to pay attention to, you know, what I wore and what I looked like. And I, in fact, found it very boring. Because that's really all I had to do. I mean, it's not all I had to do, obviously. I was playing a character in the movie. But what was great about Marge, it was wonderfully liberating not having, and in fact, I think I really like the way Marge looks. I mean, just vanity-wise, I feel like she looked good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked the way I looked. And I think that, but there was something really liberating about the costume and the padding, and I was wearing a wig and the accent. It was kind of like really similar to the clown work. And I don't mean, you know, slapstick, fall down, little cars and, you know, horns type clowning. But the clown work that I learned in drama school where we would put on kind of half masks and stand in front of a mirror and let the mask transform our face and then transform our body, then our movement, and then our voice. Every morning that I put on the pregnancy pad, the costume, the wig, started working with the accent, it was a total transformation into someone else, which is very hard to do on film as opposed to theater.
Now, you've never been pregnant, right?
No, I haven't. I am a mother. We adopted our son Pedro 11 months ago. So I've been expectant but never pregnant.
So did you feel like you should talk to mothers about what the experience of carrying was like?
No, you know, because I had played a pregnant character before or earlier in my professional life, Stella in Streetcar Named Desire, and I had that memory of, you know, just theatrically working with it. And also, there was something about Marge that I think, in fact, Norm was much more pregnant than Marge was in a way. It was important for me that it was just a fact of Marge's life. And I think it was important for Joel and Ethan that it was more a visual aspect of the character than something that was referred to. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of dramaturgically, there was this idea that there was the pregnancy of the future involved in Norm and Marge's life, that they were kind of the caretakers of the future in amongst all the craziness and the tragedy and the bizarre aspects of the movie. Marge and Norm have hope of the future. But I also think it was just a visual thing about Marge. She was this large, solid piece of brown in the middle of the white landscape.
Now, the Minnesota accents have proved to be somewhat controversial. I've read that there are some people in Minnesota who are offended at the broadness of the accents. Were you already familiar with that accent before you did the
role? No, I'd never worked on a Minnesotan accent before. Mm-hmm. Joel and Ethan are from Minnesota, but don't really have one. They've been away for about 20 years, so mm-hmm. whatever they had, they've lost. Sometimes in vowel sounds you hear it, but not in the cadence, in the music of it. But they'd written it into the script. It was scored. The script was scored with the accent. Every ya and you betcha and you oh geez was right there in the script. So it wasn't like it wasn't evident from the beginning that was necessary to create the music, you know, to score the script. But I'm from the Midwest, and though the vowel sounds in a Minnesotan accent are really based in the Scandinavian origin of the, you know, the group of people in Minnesota and Wisconsin, in that area, there was a really big Scandinavian immigration. So the vowel sounds and the music are originally from there, but it's also a lot about the attitude, which I've always found as an actor working on a dialect is just as important as the technical aspects of a dialect. And I spoke with one of the actresses that played, Hooker Number One. She didn't have a name. Hooker Number One, Larissa, who played the smaller of the two hookers. And she was born and raised in Minneapolis. And she talked about Minnesota nice.
Minnesota so, nice?
Minnesota nice is the armor there. It's keeping a smile on your face to get you through everything that you need to get through in life until absolutely necessary that you change that into something else. And what it really helped with Marge was that she always had a smile on her face, because just technically it helped me get the accent. Mm-hmm. As long as I kept a smile on my face, it was a little flatter, it was a little rounder, it was a little softer, it was a little slower. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you about the food in Fargo. The food that Marge eats is these huge platters piled high with like beef and potatoes and steam plate vegetables and
chicken and dumplings.
Yeah, okay. It's almost as if like the special effects department prepared the platters of food for you.
That was real food, that smorgasbord. I'll tell you, it was actually a really great smorgasbord. It's just hard eating that food for 10 hours, you know. And of course, Joel and Ethan wanted us to really be shoveling it in, so we were shoveling it in. And what's always weird about when you're eating in a scene, especially in a movie, is that you know, the audience sees you do it through one scene, but we were doing it literally for 10 hours. And in the middle of that, of course, everyone breaks for lunch, and you're the last person that wants to eat lunch. But it was... What I love about that scene is that it obviously it's not expository, it doesn't tell anything about it, doesn't further the plot in any way, but it's really great character behavior. You know that Marge and Norm do this at least 3 times a week, and it's something that's very specific to my background, actually. I know whenever I go home to visit my parents, they've found a new smorgasbord restaurant or an all-you-can-eat place. You put down your $12.95, you eat your money's worth, you stay there till you eat your money's worth. And my father's always been very satisfied with restaurants of that kind. I think it's a very American tradition, you know, you get
Absolutely.
Your money's worth.
Absolutely.
It's the bounty. They call it the groaning board, where my parents live.
My guest is Frances McDormand, star of the new film Fargo. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Frances McDormand, star of Fargo, which was co-written and co-directed by her husband and brother-in-law, Joel and Ethan Coen. When your husband presented you with the part of Marge in Fargo, did you say to yourself, uh-oh, what if I don't like it?
No, you know, I never even considered that, because it wouldn't have mattered. There's something about, you know, I learned about movies from Joel and Ethan. I mean, the first film I ever did was Blood Simple, was their first film. Mm-hmm. I'd never done any work behind the camera before that. And besides that, the set of Blood Simple was really, really special. And I didn't learn that until later, after being on other sets. Their sets are very collaborative. They're very tension-free. They're very conducive to making a good movie and making friends with people that are working on it. So after work, you know, I've worked with a lot of really great directors and have been in really great situations, but I still find their sets the most fun to work on and the most collaborative. So irregardless of the fact that I know them and live with one of them. So it wouldn't have mattered what it was. I was just really excited to go back to work with them. And I kind of come to a point in my professional life where I knew that if I got to work with Joel and Ethan maybe once every 5 years for the rest of my professional life, I'd be very happy.
If this isn't too personal, did you and Joel Coen fall in love while making Blood Simple?
I think Joel and I, it wasn't really until about 6 months after we worked on Blood Simple that we realized we were doing more than hanging out, and that was going to take a little longer to figure out what it was. And then about 10 years later, we realized that we'd lived together for 10 years, which was pretty exciting for both of us, pretty amazing. So I think, yeah, I'm sure we fell in love. At the time, it was much more about, it was a really exciting. I think both of us were starting out doing what we wanted to do for the rest of our lives, which was a really exciting time. And I think we both had the same attitude about what we wanted to do for the rest of our lives. And so I think that it was much more about a combination of falling in love in a romantic sense, but also finding someone whose attitude you respected about their professional life. I mean, it was a lot of things. It was really meeting some, you know, it was much, much more The beginnings of a mature relationship than mm-hmm. either of us had ever been in before.
Frances McDormand is my guest, and she's starring in the film Fargo. How did you first get bit by the acting bug?
Mrs. Zelli, my English teacher in ninth grade, we were reading Shakespeare, and she had us read some of the scenes out loud in class. And then at the time, we were reading Macbeth. And we put together some scenes from Macbeth and did them for our parents and friends after school one day. And I did the sleepwalking scene, Lady Macbeth sleepwalking scene, at the age of 14, which I now think is quite presumptuous. But I would get lost in reading. Reading was my escape, and I read voraciously from the moment I could, you know, I could have a library card. And I think in retrospect, I know now that it wasn't just standing up in front of people and feeling that kind of power and that kind of excitement. It was also the idea of realizing that this very private thing that I did, this reading and this relationship I had with literature, could in fact be a public relationship with a group of people. And that's when it started.
Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in hearing actresses talk about roles for women. What have your experiences been? Do you feel satisfied that there have been good, interesting roles available for you? Or do you feel that there really is trouble with the availability of roles for women, of good roles, roles that aren't just glamour roles?
Yeah, there are not enough stories being told. I mean, there are great stories specifically about women, but also there are just better stories about people in general than are being told in movies. I feel really lucky in that I've been able to make my own personal statement in the roles that I've played. And it has not always been the most sought-after roles. I mean, I've played a lot of very small supporting roles in films, in television, on stage. Often female roles in all of those are supporting roles. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, the nature of the stories that are being told. But I feel like even in those smaller supporting roles, I've been able to find the different story to tell. And recently, this was really wonderful. Recently, a friend called me. He was doing a script, a really wonderful script called Hidden in America. And there he called me and asked me if I would come for a short amount of time to play a role in the script, which was a mother. A really wonderful role, but not something that captured my imagination at the time. And I said to him that I really wasn't interested in doing that, but what I really liked in the script was Gus, the car mechanic. I said, who's playing that part? And he told me, and I said, well, tell that actor that he's got some competition because I really like that part. So I got a call 2 days later. The director talked to the actor who was playing Gus, car mechanic, who was a friend of his, told him that I was interested in the part, and the actor said, well, she's much better for the role. I think you should cast her. So I got to go play Gus, the car mechanic. She was Gus, the car mechanic. It was wonderful. Didn't have to change one line of the script. Didn't have to play her in any more masculine way than, you know, a man would have had to play a female role in a feminine way. That was happened to be her job.
When is the movie opening?
It's a movie for Showtime, actually, and I'm not sure when it'll be on.
Okay. And you're opening in a John Sayles movie?
Yeah, it's really good, Lone Star.
And when is that coming out?
I believe it's in June.
And you're also now in Primal Fear.
Primal Fear. Which is really good, and a low-budget independent called Palookaville by first-time director Alan Taylor. It's a really good movie. What else? That's it, I think.
So this is actually a very good time for you in terms of your career.
Oh, life in general.
Right, I mean, life in general, sure.
It's like...
Adopted son, lots of movies. Yeah,
he's
good.
Talking, he's starting his first words.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a little terrifying. You know, I was watching a tape of a short movie that I did last year with a friend and on TV, and Pedro pointed to the TV and went, "Mama." Thought, oh my goodness, here we go. This is the beginning. Now he's going to not understand why everybody he knows isn't on TV. But yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, in the last 2 years, what's really wonderful I'm finding in my professional life now is that a lot of people who are coming out of film school and starting their professional lives as directors and producers in film and in the theater as well know my work. They've seen my work. They've seen a lot of my work. I've been working for 15 years. And they think of me, I'm one of the actors that they think of when they need, you know, a 38-year-old woman, a woman in her late 30s, early 40s, they go, yeah, that woman from Blood Simple. Let's get her.
Frances McDormand, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for talking
with
us.
Thank you.
Frances McDormand stars in the new film Fargo. You can also see her in Primal Fear. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.